Welcome to A New Prescription, where we explore modern healthcare, cutting-edge medical research and technology, and the complexities of healthcare politics. Join us as we provide insights and solutions to help you navigate the American healthcare system. This is A New Prescription's inaugural podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Zwelling, a young business professional in the technology industry. And with me, of course, is my co-host, the purveyor of truth within a broken healthcare system. I know him as Dad, but in professional circles, he's Dr. Leonard A. Zwelling. Dad, say hello to the people.
This is Dr. Len Zwelling. I'm the host of this with my son, Andrew. I've had 40 years of experience as a medical oncologist and an internist in academic medicine, doing patient care, research, education, and administration. And we're going to try to use my experience to educate you in this podcast.
So for our listeners, I'm sure you've felt what I've felt when I walk into a doctor or PA's office, in that sometimes they seem way too distracted and are rushing to get you out the door to see the next patient. Also, they barely look at you, and they're glued to the computer screen as if the computer is the real patient. On today's episode, we're diving into why that's currently happening. We'll explore the forces behind the shift in healthcare, how it impacts the care you receive, and most importantly, what are some preliminary steps you can take to advocate for yourself to ensure that you're getting the best attention and care you deserve. Dad, this episode's topic draws from your blog, Does Your Doctor Have Time to Touch You? Give us a quick synopsis of the blog and tell us why you wrote it.
The reason I wrote the blog is that more as a patient than as a physician, I've had the experience now of doctors not even undressing me before they examine me. There's one particular instance that occurred at a clinic in which I was working where one of the benefits to the people working there was that we could get our health care there. So I had been hearing complaints from the physicians, I was the chief medical officer, that they didn't have enough time to see their patients adequately. So I put myself to the test and put myself through the system. And they were absolutely right. I filled out a huge questionnaire that the doctor who saw me had no access to. She asked me the same questions all over again. She had barely 15 to 30 minutes to see me. And so during the time she was supposed to examine me, she couldn't have time to undress me. She actually listened to my chest and my heart through my shirt. I didn't even take off my tie. This seemed to me not good medical care.
Why is this happening? Why are doctors moving quickly to see patients? What are the benefits of a doctor actually physically examining you?
So the reason this is happening for the most part is doctors are no longer in private practice for themselves, more likely to be employees for a healthcare system. And once they become employees, like all big institutions or businesses, they really are in business to make money and please the stockholders. And that is done by seeing more and more patients to increase the revenue. Doctors thus are given fewer and fewer minutes to see each of their patients. And what concerns me is that a lot is going to be missed if the doctors don't have a time to examine the patients. I have had many examples in my career where had I not examined the patient, I would have missed a diagnosis. But the one that came to my mind was that I was working in an emergency room moonlighting a long time ago, and a patient came in for a cold. But because I was compulsive, I always listened to their heart and their lungs. And this woman had a murmur. She had something called asymmetric septal hypertrophy, which is a serious heart disease that required surgery. And I called my friend, who was an expert at this, to do the surgery, and she did very well. But had I not examined her and just listened to her about the cold, I never would have found that out. And that was a pretty important finding.
So the fact of physicians not actually examining their patients, is this something that you think was just at the clinic you were running, or is it happening all across the country?
This is happening everywhere. doctors just don't have enough time to see the patients. They have to see high volumes to increase the amount of money going to the clinic. And if they're lucky, they can go through one problem per patient per visit. And most patients, particularly the elderly, and I'm one of those patients, have four more problems at one than one that have to be faced at any given clinic visit.
Okay, so we've talked about patient delivery at the hospitals. What about the insurance company? They're the other part of this equation. What are your thoughts on the insurance industry?
Well, part of the push to see more and more patients is because the insurance companies are not paying the healthcare delivery systems what they used to pay. So in other words, for each unit of work a doctor does, the facility where the doctor works is making fewer and fewer dollars. This is how the healthcare insurance companies really control the flow in medicine. They also, by the way, disallow certain things doctors want to do. The doctor may request an MRI, but the ultimate responsibility for deciding whether that MRI gets done rests with the insurance company, who may or may not pay for it. If they don't think it's appropriate, or if their overseers or their physicians think it's not appropriate, it won't be paid for and it probably won't get done.
And by appropriate, is that based on medical decisions or is it financial?
It's financial on the part of the insurance companies because their goal is to not pay for anything. If they get paid premiums and they don't pay anything, they're making a lot of money. So their goal is to pay for nothing. The doctors want to get what they believe is needed to make the proper diagnosis and treatment. There can be a disagreement of opinion between the doctor and the forces at the insurance company making the decision on whether or not to pay. And that is not uncommon. That happens all the time.
Who's the tiebreaker?
It depends how hard the doctor pushes. If the doctor pushes very hard, the doctor usually can get things done. But the ultimate decision does rest with the insurance company.
Just given my personal experiences and the way that you've explained it today, I really don't think that the insurance companies have our health in mind when they're making these decisions.
That's not really what companies care about. Companies, particularly large insurance companies that actually may be on the stock exchange, are most concerned about making money and keeping their stock value high. That's what the board of directors expect, and that's what their stockholders expect. Their major driver is not your well-being as a patient, but their well-being as a corporation.
I think this is a really important point to underline, and that the healthcare insurance companies, they don't care about outcomes. And I think thinking about the analogy you've always talked about, healthcare insurance companies being listed on the stock market is like a roulette table being next to a patient's hospital bed, in that the outcome of what happens on the roulette table dictates if the patient is going to be actually treated.
Yeah, well, like I said, everybody in the system has something else as their primary interest. Obviously, the patient's primary interest is to get well. The physician's primary interest is to help that patient get well. The facility where the physician is working may or may not have that as their primary interest. Their interest may be, if they're part of a large corporation, they also may have money as their primary interest, and for sure the insurance companies do. It's a very complicated system with many moving parts, and within those parts are different drivers for what people want.
So how is this different when you were a physician? Was it this complicated? Was it this financially driven? When you were a physician, what was it like?
No, not really. And there weren't these tug of wars between physicians and insurance companies like they are now. But remember, the technology has advanced dramatically over 50 years, and that technology is very expensive. The amount of money we spend as a nation, it's 17% of the gross domestic product. It's over trillions of dollars are spent in healthcare delivery. A lot of that is driven by technology. So there is a counter argument by the insurance companies that if they just wrote checks for everything someone ordered, they'd be out of business fast. There's always a balance that must be struck, and it's very difficult to find the sweet spot.
I understand that, but think about it. We pay premiums for coverage. Then we have to meet a deductible before the insurance company will cover it. And then even once we meet the deductible, we either have to pay for coinsurance or a copay altogether to get the treatment we need.
Now, I think your description is very apt. It's far more ruthless than it was back when I was in training 50 years ago. There wasn't as much going on. There's far more corporatization of medicine. Doctors are more employees now than they ever were before. And the insurance companies have far greater power than they had when I was a young physician. So you're not wrong. What I'm basically saying is it's much different today than it was 50 years ago.
Are things going to improve under the Trump administration?
I don't think anything is going to change under the Trump administration. Trump has talked about getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, and that's insured about 20 million Americans that previously were uninsured. So if we get rid of that, that makes things worse. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they may do modifications of Obamacare, but in the main, I think it's going to stay in place. But do I think things are going to get better for those people that are not insured now? No, I do not.
What about his nominations that he's picked for these very specific federal government institutions?
Yeah, the one that you got to keep your eyes on is Dr. Oz running Medicare and Medicaid services. It's not really something he probably knows much about. It's pretty dry stuff there. It's a lot of regulations and a lot of pure bureaucracy. I'm not sure how interested he's going to be in that in the long term. I think that what you're going to find is that there's going to be a shift toward more intense look at public health if Bobby Kennedy Jr. gets in as head of HHS, and probably less and less money for research at the National Institutes of Health, which is very concerning for those of us in academic medicine who believe that money is really the bedrock of new discoveries. And should that dry up, that would really be tragic.
I want to circle back to what the blog was about. There's obviously a problem that we have to face every day. What can our listeners do to protect themselves and ensure they're getting the best care whenever they visit their doctor?
Well, the first is they've got to have a doctor. So the number one thing that anybody out there listening should do is to develop a relationship with a given physician or physician's assistant who provides them with their care, and make sure that person is aware of your healthcare problems, aware of the medicines you're taking, and certainly visit that person at least once per year. So that's the number one thing. The second thing is to understand the terms of your health insurance. What's covered, what's not, and when it's not, can you budget so that those expenses that are not covered by your insurance, you've put aside money for?
Yeah, so I've tried to look over those documentation pieces, and there is a lot of lawyer jargon when I try to read my policy. How's a normal person like me that isn't a physician supposed to understand their benefits when the documents have many pages?
Usually there are matrices and charts that are specific for the benefits that involve money, and there are booklets that list the doctors covered by your insurance. I wouldn't read the small print in your insurance policy. You'd probably fall asleep anyway. But there are ways to get access to the numbers when it comes to dollars and to the doctors who could service you.
Okay, so I've established a good relationship with my primary care doctor. I've read the terms of my insurance policy. What specifically can I do when I walk into a specific doctor's office to make sure I come out of there with everything I need?
So you think about this before you get there and write down your questions on a piece of paper. It's also a great idea to bring all of your medicines with you so the doctor can see them So you don't have to do that by memory. And you're not going to understand the names of all these things, but your doctor will. So bring the medicines, the actual bottles with you. If you're going for your annual physical, for example, then you need to relate to the doctor what's transpired since your last one. Have there been any changes? If you're calling in for a specific complaint, be as focused on that complaint as you possibly can be and have a good idea of what you want out of the visit. More than just feeling better, you want a plan for when you feel better, when you ought to feel better, and what to do if you don't feel better.
So have you done this when you've walked into a doctor's office? And can you give us an example of the questions you've asked another physician?
Sure. I've had a lot of trouble with back pain, and I have been to physical therapists and a whole lot of other kinds of ancillary treatment. When I finally got to a back surgeon, and I asked very specific questions about where the lesions might be, what he was going to do to diagnose it, and he did an MRI, which was very helpful and very diagnostic. And then we made a plan together on what we would do. And when that plan didn't work, we moved to a more invasive treatment of injection of steroids in my back. That's a very concrete example of what kind of relationship I have with the doctor. Now, admittedly, I'm a physician. It makes it a little easier when you can speak the jargon that physicians speak. Nonetheless, I do think people can educate themselves, preferably not by typing in their symptoms on the internet, but actually discussing how they feel with their physicians and making a plan going forward.
Dad, this has been great. I think you've armed us with things that we can do when we walk into the doctor's office. And if we feel like we're not getting examined properly, we have methods in which we can make sure we come out of there. Are there any final words that you have before we send it off?
Never forget the power of a second opinion if you don't feel you're getting far with the first. And be careful with the internet. The internet has a lot of good information. It has a lot of bad information. It's not bad to use to develop the questions you're going to ask your doctor. It's not good to convince yourself of what's wrong with you.
And that's the final word. Thank you for tuning in to A New Prescription. We appreciate your support and hope you found today's episode insightful and engaging.
Please send any comments you have to my email address, leonard.zwelling@gmail.com, or read my blog at lenzwelling.com, where you will also find links to my books, Congressional Malpractice and Conflict of Interest.